If the only way to make it is true street food, you will lose some of the brightest minds in the country.
Welcome to You Don't Know Vietnam, the show that demystifies Vietnam for global audiences by talking to the creatives, trendsetters, and business owners who are taking on the market. Forget what you thought you knew about Vietnam. It's no longer that, as you're about to find out. I'm Ian Paynton, co-founder of We Create Content, a content marketing agency that builds audiences for global brands in Vietnam. On today's episode of You Don't Know Vietnam, I'm talking to food and beverage marketer turned blogger, founder and consultant, Jovel Chan. Jovel landed in Vietnam a few years ago, and she's quickly made her mark as the go-to authority of Vietnam's evolving food and dining scene. She offers insider guides to Vietnam's F&B industry on her website jovelchan.com and is the founder of Saigon Social, the company behind Vietnam's unique food and drink experiences, such as the Saigon Supper Club and Cocktail Cinema. Today, Jovel tells me what's going on in Vietnam's food and dining scene right now, why Vietnam's young and experimental chefs are writing the next chapter of Vietnam's food story, and what global F&B brands should consider when looking to launch in Vietnam. Jovel, oi!
Hey, Ian, what's up?
What is up? Thank you for joining me on You Don't Know Vietnam.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about today.
Me too. And you know what? Looking at your website, it just makes me feel like, A, really excited about the way in which Vietnam's food and dining scene is moving, and B, really out of touch and like I need to get out more.
I thought you were going to say that you were really hungry. I feel like I need to go back and change my photos now.
And really hungry.
Yeah, good.
It makes me feel like I'm not exploring like everything Vietnam has to offer, because I usually go with quite safe bets of what I know. And usually it's like more traditional Vietnamese dishes. So yeah, there's so much to explore. And just looking at it, I can tell that I'm really missing out. So going into the year of the dragon, what are the food, beverage, and dining things that you're most excited about for Vietnam right now?
I really spent the last 3 years writing about restaurants, bars, chefs, everything up and coming in Vietnam, just really focusing in Saigon, which is where I'm staying. So very naturally, and also most of the happenings are really in Saigon and Hanoi, where you're at, right? So I spent the first 3 years just covering these two destinations. Going into 2024, Year of the Dragon, I am seeing a lot more movement and happenings and events in destinations like Phu Quoc, Nha Trang, even Nha Trang, Da Nang, Hoi An. So I'm really excited to be expanding the horizon and seeing what's up in these other places.
Yeah, I saw you had guides on Phu Quoc. I think there was something on Da Nang, or at least you were doing gastronomic experiences throughout the whole country rather than the two main cities. And I also saw someone post on Facebook the other day about this joint in Nha Trang, and I was thinking the same. Wow, there's so much going on right now outside of Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City.
Definitely. I think because of the tourism in many different destinations, you've got north, you've got south, you've got central, we really see a lot more hotel development, a lot of travelers coming in. And that's why I believe there's a lot more dining experiences as well. Like last year in Hoi An, a mezcal bar opened. Isn't that very interesting and impressive? Like an underground mezcal bar. And there's a Vietnamese cheesemaker that does tastings in Hoi An. So you see a little bit more of these experiences that are coming up, I think really because of the tourism push.
How are you seeing Vietnamese flavors change or be incorporated into this modern experience? Because I'm not sure that all these restaurants are now serving traditional Vietnamese street food dishes. What's going on?
What we really see happening in Vietnam, especially in the city center like Saigon and Hanoi, let's start with these two cities, right? And what I really personally see is an openness to different cuisines and flavors across the spectrum. Like you can go to a wet market and you can now see Korean instant noodles and Korean flavors. And that's really the community grassroots, right? The local wet markets are selling Korean and Japanese noodles now, which shows an acceptance and international flavors that are penetrating just day-to-day consumption. So that's what we see. But what you also can see is that these international flavors, beyond just day-to-day household eating, are also penetrating the very mid-market. You can go out and have you ever seen Korean and Japanese chains, fast food chains in Vietnam? Very common right now. All the Golden Gate restaurants, right? You can see all of these places serving up Taiwanese hot pot, Korean barbecue for like 100K. Vietnamese people are opening up their palates to international flavors across the spectrum, across different consumption habits as well. And of course, it goes into fine dining and casual dining, right? So I think what I do see in the Vietnam market is the penetration of international flavors. And then secondly, is a marriage of international and Vietnamese, right? So you see what we call modern Vietnamese or fusion Vietnamese. And these are really more in the casual and premium, where Vietnamese chefs incorporate international influences. Like you have Moa, which is really a Japanese-Vietnamese concept, right? So they'll do things like a bun xiu, konomiyaki. Really interesting combinations like that, but very mid-market. And then you have, obviously, your finer dining restaurants like Ann's and Esta and Anan Saigon that really take Vietnamese flavors to the next level, either by elevating popular classics like banh mi and pho and reinterpreting it in a way that is they'll simmer their broth for 18 hours using a different kind of bone or beef to enrich those flavors, but the structure of the dish might not actually be different. So Peter does this really well with his pho concept. His modern pho concept still serves bowls of pho, but done in a way where, you know, how they cook it is a lot more different. The ingredients that he uses is more premium. To take something that is often used or enjoyed by the streets using perhaps cheaper ingredients to something a little bit more refined. But then you also have chefs that are doing something completely different and almost serving up deconstructed or reconstructed versions of these Vietnamese dishes that you know from the streets. So it's very interesting to see how each chef actually does this in his or her own way. Because of the history of Vietnam, a lot of these chefs are also first generation, second generation that come back after living abroad for really long. So a lot of the chefs, depending on where they're from, also have a very different take on what this modern Vietnamese cuisine is and basically want to do something different as a sense of like national pride. They really come back here because they were probably ousted, right? Sent away, had to grow up in somebody else's foreign ass country and eat Vietnamese food that was over there or like cook for somebody else and cook food that was not authentically theirs. So they come back here and they're finally able to do something. And there is really that sense of like pride. And if you talk to every single Vietnamese chef here who's doing something at that level of modern Vietnamese, you can literally hear how they want to showcase Vietnamese food in the way that they feel that it should be rightfully delivered. Because they cook pho overseas for a living because they had no choice. They've never had the choice. They have constantly been occupied over and over cooking food to serve other people and serving themselves using ingredients that they were only given because they had no money. So now you ask them to keep making that food And all of a sudden, they're like, we have money, we have skills, we want to do something different. This is the only time that we see that happening. And that's why it's very interesting. When you eat Vietnamese food and go to these restaurants, it's very different from any other country that I've been to.
What sort of Vietnamese food classics are being reimagined and reconstructed? I know you mentioned about pho and some bang xeo. What other examples can you think of where they've taken a Vietnamese classic and completely reimagined it?
There's a chef that came back and he served a bun gan, like noodle soup, but instead he did it with dumplings. And he created these hand-pressed dumplings that resembled the boats on the Mekong Delta. And he served up that dish. And it was served using the method that you would usually use to serve a consommé instead. Yeah. So we see the influence from overseas in how a typical consommé is usually cooked, mixed with this traditional Vietnamese soup and served with toppings that are very different from what the traditional dish is, which is like a noodle and fish, but this one has dumplings instead. So this is that dish that I personally remember a lot. And I find it a lot more relatable too, because I know what a consommé is and I know how it's supposed to be like. And I'm able to understand this dish a little bit more with this base of comparison that I have. So yeah, I think this is one of those dishes that I was able to really relate and remember a lot.
And what you're talking about wouldn't have been acceptable 5 or 6 years ago in Vietnam, I don't think. I remember some restaurants would kind of experiment with Vietnamese flavors and dishes, and there'd be an uproar on social media because that's not how it should be done. But it seems to me that there's a lot more openness to that change now, and it's actually being embraced.
Yep. So I completely agree with you. I personally believe that it's because of the growing international recognition and interest of Vietnam's dining scene in the past number of years, namely the Michelin Guide, right? Mm-hmm. So when the Michelin Guide was announced in Vietnam and the first list of winners came out, all the one stars were Vietnamese restaurants, besides Koki, which is a Japanese restaurant. But 3 out of 4 were uniquely Vietnamese. 2 of those 3 are fine dining Vietnamese. There also seemed to be a, for the lack of a better word, perhaps a, not a biasness, but a little bit more of an inclination towards Vietnamese cuisine, right? Of course, because the Michelin Guide should be in a certain country needs to spotlight the local cuisine. And what I think it has done is made it quote unquote acceptable. And modern Vietnamese cuisine was not something that was taking something out of context. And like what you mentioned, right? People were no longer putting it down and slamming it as being inauthentic, but something that was used to spotlight the country. So now what you see actually is a lot of Vietnamese restaurants, especially the new ones and existing ones, now start saying, oh, we use Vietnamese ingredients. Oh, we are now modern Vietnamese.
If I hear you correctly, then it was happening in the years leading up to the first ever Michelin Guide. And what's happened is the Michelin Guide has just cemented it in terms of people accepting it and even embracing it as a way to progress their own dining experiences or products.
Yeah. Modern Vietnamese cuisine and these chefs that are at the helm of some of these restaurants are now heralded as like heroes, right? They are people who are championing Vietnam, bringing Vietnam to the world. So modern Vietnamese cuisine is not something that's inauthentic. It's something that is, it's almost as place as equal importance as maybe street food cuisine now, right? It's almost like Vietnam going to reclaim their cuisine, right?
I'm pretty excited by that. Do you see it changing from north to south, how they're progressing and rethinking Vietnamese food? Or is it pretty much the same across the board?
It really depends on where the chef is from. If they're from Australia or Europe, that is how perhaps their interpretation of modern Vietnamese cuisine is. Don, he's Nordic, and he'll brand his cuisine as Nordic Vietnamese. You will see that Chef Harold No is Australian, so he'll always say that it's a little bit Australian. So that's how they brand their versions of modern Vietnamese cuisine. What I see that actually changes from the north to the south is how people dine. In the north, it's a little bit more conservative, things that are a little bit more private, right? Things that perhaps are a little bit more less chef pop-ups, a little bit more under the radar. And even the demographic is a little bit different. You'll see perhaps more locals over there in the finer dining restaurants as compared to Saigon. So I don't think the cuisine really changes from north to south, but I think the demographic of clientele and in terms of perhaps how the restaurant looks or markets and positions itself for that particular city is very different. In Saigon, restaurants here probably every month have to do something to engage. It's very loud here. There's all the four hands and eight hands and 10 hands chef collaborations and culinary events are here in Saigon for a reason, right? So it's very different in terms of the restaurants and the market.
I don't know what the eight hands, 10 hands collaborations are.
Yeah, so in the recent years as well, what has happened is Saigon has become a hub for a lot of the chefs in different parts of Vietnam to come together, to cook together, because there is no central platform that helps to promote the culinary scene in Vietnam. So a lot of the chefs in the dining scene have to come together and through each other's networks, promote themselves and each other. Yeah, and that always happens in Saigon. And why it's called 10 hands is because five different chefs come down and there's 10 hands. Now there is even 20 hands, 10 chefs come down and they start to cook together. In Saigon, what you always also see is culinary weeks and culinary events from the hotels. So in Park Hyatt Saigon, you have Passion Week, which all the chefs come and cook at. Sofitel, that all happening. And right now in other hotels in the different destinations like Phu Quoc and Nha Trang, you also see those hotels hosting culinary weeks and events.
Just to reverse a little bit back to the Michelin Guide, the first ever in Vietnam, what was your opinion on that? Did you have one? Because I remember there being a lot of talk about it and it seemed relatively controversial at the time. Was it controversial? And what did you think?
I think it still is controversial and it at that time was very controversial. I did share my personal opinion about it online when it happened. Uh-huh. And yeah, I think there were some people who were not very happy with me about it.
Why was it controversial?
It was controversial, but because I think the Michelin Guide is, especially the first one, is always going to be very controversial because everybody has their favorite place and it might not gel with what the people in the market think is the best or is not the best. Yeah.
So do you regret your opinion or publishing your opinion on it now?
I don't regret it. It's still online. And I did mention that of the 29 BIP Gourmand, I'm reading it right now, of the 29 BIP Gourmand awardees, only three restaurants, which is less than 10%, serve non-Vietnamese cuisine. Exactly like what I mentioned before, I'm very happy that it shines a very big spotlight on Vietnamese cuisine and Vietnamese chefs across the BIP Gourmand, which is really just the street stalls and the mom and pops, to the luxury fine dining. But in terms of representation, I don't personally believe that it did a very good job. And there are many cuisines that were not included, and two of which, Japanese and Korean, I personally feel is the best in Vietnam, right? Because of the very strong expat community that we have here, and even Taiwanese as well. And many of them were not included. Not sure why. Perhaps there's so many that you can't include them, or perhaps there was a lot of accusations about the Eurocentricity of the Michelin Guide, right? So these are things that you want to question, but can't because you don't really know why.
Wouldn't surprise me if the guide was attempting to kind of harness national pride a little bit in its first attempt.
Definitely. I think that I spoke to a lot of the restaurant and bar owners. Before, they have always survived on domestic guests, the domestic market. Bars and restaurants here have always survived, right? Even the ones that got 50 best, they told me before that they didn't even know what it was and they didn't think, like, they don't care about it. Because it was not a thing here in Vietnam. So they're like, okay, I got this award. Okay, no big deal, right? There's so much national pride within themselves and all they do is market to themselves. So your international awards don't mean anything to a lot of these people. Until recently, when they start seeing, oh, wow, one of the bar owners told me his bar is on 50 best. And he's like, last year or 2 years ago, it was not a very good year for Vietnam's F&B scene. And he said, but thankfully, we have so many tourists. Thankfully, so many people find us from this list. So they're very grateful. And now you see Vietnamese bartenders and chefs going overseas because they started to recognize these awards. But on that note, what I'm saying is that the reason why I personally believe also Michelin had to come in here and win over the local Vietnamese was because Vietnamese people, they don't care about your awards, right? They don't care about international people trying to tell them where the best place to go. They don't care about it. So yeah, even in the industry, they didn't care about it till a year or 2 years ago. You ask any Vietnamese person right now, what is a Michelin guide? Do they look at it? Nobody's going to tell you yes, because they know all the best spots themselves. So that's probably why, right?
Let's say a global F&B brand or a startup F&B brand is looking to launch in Vietnam. What tips would you give them to tackle the Vietnamese market?
There are two things that I personally really recommend. One of them is localization is very important. And I don't mean that localization in a very traditional sense. I had gone to a invite-only conference for a overseas pizza chain that came in. And the guy said that all across Vietnam, people drink cha da and sit on small little chairs. So when we enter the market, we're going to make sure that we're going to serve cha da as well. That to me is not a good localization strategy. It's to understand more about how people consume and in terms of their behaviors and habits. Like what I previously mentioned, Vietnamese people are actually very open to exploring different flavors and cuisines. But it can't be too unfamiliar, right? It can't be completely on the other end of the spectrum. So finding something in between. And another thing is localization in the sense of understanding why is it that people enjoy drinking cha da? Because it's really hot. Because it's something light. People like light flavors here, right? It's the same reason why iced tea sells really popular. Iced tea, like in general, iced fruity teas sell really well. Every cafe in Vietnam will have an iced tea. And I promise you that half of the cafe sales is the iced tea. And I think understanding the more of the why behind people eat and drink a certain way is more important. And factoring that into the localization and the product development and marketing strategy is perhaps more important rather than seeing the product itself. Yeah, I think that's a much better way to think of localization. One of my least favorite things is looking at banh mi pizzas. I don't necessarily think that's the most clever way to localize a product.
Right. Just by going A plus B must equal C.
Yes. And I think that currently a lot of businesses, especially F&B, look at like popular foods and take that as almost a default of what will work. Not realizing that some of the coolest trends in Vietnam are not like that at all, right? It's really not like that at all. This salted lemon fizzy drink, That's super not really very Vietnamese at all. You do see the TikTok viral trend, like the salted lemon fizzy drink? Or salted coffee with foam right now is really popular. That's understanding about the element of entertainment, the element of unique drinks, the element of something different yet familiar and refreshing is more important than what's a very popular Vietnamese food and how can we make into our product.
So understand the why, understand motivations, flavor profiles, preferences, and then innovate based on that, not just slap a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah. The most popular things that I see in Vietnam are never like, they're not just like a pho bun mi like thing. It's always something interesting that excites me as well, right? It's not just something boring.
So that's one. You said you had a second one.
The second one that I really think helps a lot in Vietnam is getting into Vietnam F&B marketing requires you to be on the ground. There are many things that you can only know through seeing and talking to people. And the best connections are the ones that you're really going to build on the ground. Vietnam in general is a very relationship kind of country, right? Would you agree, Aiden?
Oh yeah, it's all about the relationships.
It's all about relationships. And it was something that I really learned and appreciate. Coming from Singapore, we're not really like that. We're quite like, hey, let me go on LinkedIn and talk to you and based on like where you work and where I work and where, and then we go. It's in Singapore, it's a little bit different. So when I came here, I was very lucky because we were locked down here and the blog became like a goodwill, right? Because it was a source for everybody to find food. So I started off with a very community approach and from there won the trust of a lot of the F&B owners and brands. But when I went in here, at first being like, hi, I'm from Singapore. I have 10 years of experience working in F&B. I cared. So I really think doing business in Vietnam and coming into Vietnam, especially the F&B industry, which is still very small, yeah, you really need to be on the ground, earn trust from people, and make those like in-person relationships. Would you agree with that?
Completely. And it takes time, doesn't it? It takes time, much longer than you would expect. There's a saying in Vietnamese that's translated to, you can't hurry Hanoi. But actually, I think that's probably the same for you can't hurry Vietnam to a certain extent, which I think there's a balance to strike there as well, because Vietnam is so rapidly on the move and people want stuff now and yesterday, but also there's an element of patience that's needed as well to let things play out and build relationships and earn trust. So it's kind of a tricky thing to navigate, I find, doing business here, mixing urgency and ambition and the fire to get stuff done with the patience that it takes.
You're absolutely right. But without that patience to build the relationship, you realize that things can't move fast as well. Things will only move fast in Vietnam if you have the relationships, right? And there's a lot of information that isn't necessarily always disclosed online that you have to know somebody to get it. So that's why when you come into Vietnam to do business, I recommend for all F&B and every business person, to be very honest, to actually spend time being on the ground and talking to people, because they'll give you the insight that you will never find online, right? You just never be able to get it.
You have to be here, live it and breathe it.
We really, really do. And I think for the first year, it's also to put down that ego. Nobody cares. In the same way nobody here cared about the Michelin, nobody cares about what, like where you worked, where you come from. You're not impressing anybody here. Your 15 years of whatever experience you had in Goldman Sachs or whatever, right? Come here and yeah, learn. And if you, and I feel that in Vietnam, if you start being like, oh yeah, I was from like this place and I worked there, so nobody wants to talk to you. Like, what have you really done? If they only respect you if you've done something in Vietnam, that they know about. They don't care. Look at all the like overseas international brands that come in here. It's not like people are raving about them.
They have to earn it, right?
You really have to earn it. I completely agree. You have to earn the trust and love of Vietnam. And the only way you can do that is it's very personal and it has to be very like genuine. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah.
I'd like to end these episodes by asking you, what are you most excited about for Vietnam's future?
The thing I'm most excited about, and I think the thing I am most passionate about, and my goal and my mission, is really for Vietnam, especially the food industry, to be known more than just street food. I think whenever somebody knows a Vietnamese spirit maker or a chocolate brand, I think that is a sense of pride. And that's the goal, right? And I don't want this to be like, I don't care about street food in any way, but sustainability of the industry and the cuisine is as much rooted in traditional street cuisine and fare, but also in the finer dining space. Yeah, because it makes people recognize and realize the sanctity of Vietnamese cuisine and ingredients and products, and it pushes up the willingness to pay for a lot of it. And it's only when you spotlight Vietnamese chefs and makers will you build a society of people who see a long-term career in food and drink. If the only way to make it is through street food, you will lose some of the brightest minds in the country. You're asking people to work a lot for very little. That used to probably work in the past, but that would never work now. You're going to push all the young people away, and then you'll never have Vietnamese food anymore.
You've been listening to You Don't Know Vietnam. I'm Ian Paynton from We Create Content. I'd like to thank DJ Jace from the Beat Saigon for their epic soundtrack, and a massive thank you to you for making it all the way to the end.